87.9. This is Pirate Cat Radio. My name is Zephyr. The show is called Frank Prattle. You're listening live in Los Angeles and San Francisco, California. If you're down in Los Angeles, think about moving up to San Francisco. It's a much, much nicer town, but I don't have to tell you that. You can listen live on the web at www.piratecatradio.com. It is spelled exactly how it sounds. I hope you can spell cat and pirate and radio. If not, well, never mind. You probably shouldn't be on the computer anyway. We have some lovely guests on today. Chuck Mobley from SF Camera Work and Amy LeDuc from Southern Exposure. Why don't you guys say hi and maybe, you know, I don't know.
Hi, Zephyr.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. All right, Amy, you keep speaking. We got to fix your mic.
Oh, can you hear me now?
How about now?
Can you hear me now?
You got to get a little closer.
Wow, you really have to swallow that thing. Oh.
We're having some minor difficulty.
I'm going deaf. Ow.
Hey, there it is. Look.
Radio hurts.
All right, I think we're good to go.
Okay.
Okay. So, Amy, tell us who you are and what company you work for.
A company.
Yeah,
I don't think.
Big deal.
I certainly don't work for a company. My name is Amy LeDuc, and I am currently the associate director at Southern Exposure. And Southern Exposure is an artist-run nonprofit organization. We've been around for 32 years. And I've not been with them for 32 years, but I started interning there, and then I've been working there since February. So that's me.
Chuck, what about yourself?
Well, I'm the associate director of San Francisco Camera Work Incorporated. It's a nonprofit. it's a nonprofit arts organization as well. It's been around for 32 years as well, and I've been there for I think a third of my life at this point.
Yeah, 100 years, right? Yeah. Chuck started the organization.
What? So I didn't know that both of them started in the same year. Then
1974.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was going on in San Francisco in 1974?
Well, the NEA started funding places and. Rent was cheap. I think, you know, I've been told from a guy named Hal Fisher that was one of the first ones to, you know, get the organization incorporated as a nonprofit, that there, I think there were 10 original board members. They put in $20 each and rented space, yeah, on 12th Street in South Market. And, you know, of course, times have changed. But, yeah, I mean, it was cheap to do it, and there was funding from the government, and people had the power back in the day. So,
what's changed?
Well, rents have gone through the roof.
Right.
And
do you live in the city?
I do. I live downtown. And
Amy,
I don't live downtown. For God's sake, I live in Bernal Heights.
Ah. Anyway, sorry, Chuck. You were saying.
What was I saying?
I don't know.
Oh, about what's changed?
Yeah.
Well, the rents went up, and, you know, different people have the power. I don't know. I moved here in 99. It was the height of the dot-com thing, and that's when I started becoming involved with Camera Work, and I was an intern, and we were on Natoma Street, which was right behind the museum. It was a lovely space. They'd been there for 5 years, and the rent went from $30,000, I think, to $198,000, and you know, it was an untenable rent increase, and we had to move. And we moved in with New Langton Arts on Folsom Street, and they've been in that building, I think, for more than 20 years now. And for 6 years, we shared space and rotated the gallery, and now we have a new space downtown on Mission between 3rd and New Montgomery.
Yeah. Now, I stopped by the other day,
mm-hmm.
and I had a question for you.
Yeah.
I couldn't see any signage out front.
Right. There's a sandwich board right now. It's the SF Camera Work Deli.
Cheap, very lunch special.
It's a bratwurst here. No, we're getting signage. It's just you got to bear with us. It was a quick move. I mean, I think we got the permit for occupancy 2 days before we moved in.
Wow.
And we literally moved, you know, dropped all the boxes and immediately started installing a show that opened in 10 days. So it's been really, you know, really hectic.
Right.
Hectic time.
And Southern Exposure just went through a big move as well.
Yeah, our story is a little bit different. We, the first 32 years of our organization, we were in theater, the Project Artaud building. And that building actually was started again, in the early 70s, it was really sort of squatters that were there, and they were putting up their own work and that sort of thing. And then this real communal system of live workspace started there, and that model is still existing in various forms today. And that gallery, that Southern Exposure Gallery, sort of grew out of that. And then, you know, we got our own 501c3 and became our own nonprofit and that sort of thing, and really have been operating independently for quite some time from the Arto building. But that building needs to be retrofitted. So it's been a long process for them to sort of understand the process of how to retrofit. Oh, thanks. I'm tangled. How to retrofit the building. But, you know, it just ultimately we had to get out of there so that process could happen. And so we moved in July. But again, it was a very quick move for us as well. But we thankfully sort of planned our programming around having a different space and an alternative space. So we sort of consciously we consciously changed our programming to change with the kind of space that we were moving into. So I think we really sort of wanted to use it as a chance to think about different models of an arts organization and different ways that we could interact with the community. So our programming this year is all about off-site, and it's based on the situationist model of sort of the derive and this, you know, perfect hyperbolic word, psychogeography.
Ooh, could you just say that again?
Psychogeography.
that describes my neighborhood.
It can pretty much mean everything and nothing all at once, but the situationists were really everything. When they were really active in France in the 40s and 50s and even 60s, they were really, the Industrial Revolution had taken over and everything was all about consumption. So everything in an urban environment was directed for you to consume. So from very obvious having stores everywhere and everything, but even from the roads and the way you walk and the way you orient yourself through a city, it's all about consumption. And so,
now, just to clarify real quick, even the way you walk through a city is oriented on consumption?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of theorists were talking about this at the time, like literally, like the way the sidewalks are made and the way the roads are made and everything, it really directs you to consume and to really sort of passively go through this world and just sort of let the outside world control you. And, you know, they were really kind of paranoid and weird about it, but, you know, in a very French way, which is lovely. But so a lot of artists are still working in this way today, and they're really trying to create projects and happenings and tours and workshops that really sort of jar you out of that and really sort of give you a point of entry into a different way of orienting yourself in an urban space. And so that's what we're really doing. So instead of, you know, a traditional gallery model where we put up a show and take down a show and put up a show, we're really, we are asking artists to really create projects for us that really sort of incite the community to act in a different way.
Huh. What, now, Chuck, your programming, I've heard, this is, you know, strictly rumor, so I'm not gonna spill my source either, so don't bother asking. I hear that Camera Work is going to be switching their programming around as well.
How so? What did you hear? What was?
Oh, nothing. I don't
Chuck's
know.
Like, really? What?
Just tell us. Tell
is
us
my
what's
job on the line?
Or
are you telling me I'm getting canned?
This is totally it. They outsourced me to fire you.
Right.
So clever.
Well, you know, Camera Work has a mandate that, you know, we show emerging and mid-career artists and we're focused on photography and digital media.
Right.
And that's really kind of a broad field, so I don't feel limited by it at all. In fact, I feel like it's, you know, gives us a lot of wiggle room. I mean, the main vision that I have is trying to look at what photography is now, what it's becoming, and I feel like each of the exhibitions coming up, whether they're curated by me or a guest curator or, you know, someone from the programming committee from within the organization, all ask a really specific question, and I think it's a pretty dynamic set of exhibitions we have coming up. I mean, in January we open a show of two films and a video piece.
That's, I think...
It's called Traces of Life on the Thin Film of Longing, and Jim Cohen, Jenny Olsen, and Natalie Zimmerman. And then in March we have a show called Not Given, talking of and around images of Arab women, and that draws from the Arab Image Foundation in Beirut. And I don't think there are actual photographs in that exhibition, but it's more looking at the archive and, you know, Western perceptions of images of Arab women in the Arab world. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I definitely think that, you know, like, straying pretty far into video is a pretty fairly new direction, no?
Mm. Well, it seems like there are a lot of people doing video. And, I mean, one of the pieces we have in the gallery right now in the exhibition, Ghost in the Machine, it's sort of an amalgamation of photography, performance, and video. Ann Carlson and Mary Ellen Strom, who are actually in town right now. They're at the Headlands. They have a residency, and really brilliant artists and lovely people. And they did this amazing piece called Nine Bell Stop. And they're interacting with an Etienne Marey photograph from the early 20th century, late 19th century. And Ann Carlson's a performance artist, and Mary Ellen does video, and it's this beautiful 2.5 minute silent loop. And so I think it's an interesting direction, you know?
Sounds good.
Yeah.
For the listeners listening out there, that one again, our telephone number is 415-626-6180. If you want to call in and hassle these two, feel more than free. I'll patch you directly through to them. You don't have to hold it all. And they're taking all questions this morning. Everything.
Lay it all on the table.
From top to bottom.
Bring it on.
Really.
Bring it on.
You're listening to 87.9 Pirate Cat Radio. My name is Zephyr. This is Frank Prattle. And you're listening to Amy LeDuc and Chuck Mobley talk about what they give a shit about in this world. Amy, you were talking a little bit about how you had switched to different programming,
mm-hmm.
and what are some of the different groups that you're working with when you've gone off-site, outdoors?
Well, it was actually pretty... Oh, sorry. I forgot. I have to chew on the microphone while I speak into it.
Tastes better that way.
We put a call out, an open call out, sort of... on the internet through everything and for this offsite programming, and we received over 300 applications to be an offsite. So we were unbelievably overwhelmed, and we've never really had a response like that. So it was really amazing that a lot of, you know, it's always sort of uplifting to see that so many people are interested in what you're interested in. And
were these local mostly, or
all over the world? I mean, a lot of like Canadians and Germans and from Central America. I mean, it was coming from all over the place. But again, similar to camera work, we really like to, Southern Exposure really does focus on the emerging artist, and we really try to focus on the local artist as well. It's important to us that, you know, Bay Area and California artists really get a chance to show and participate in our programming. But we went through all these applications, and we selected 8 groups of people, artist groups and individual artists to work with. And right now, we're working with Neighborhood Public Radio. And they're in,
who are those guys?
Oh, I don't know much about them, actually. No, I'm kidding. They're they're an amazing group of cultural producers, as we like to say. And
I heard they were just a bunch of radio punks. Is that true?
Well, we say cultural producers.
Because that's what Courtney told you to say.
That's what I am supposed to say. NPR good. No, they have actually set up a radio station, literally as we are broadcasting. They've set up a radio station inside our gallery, and for the next 8 months we'll be broadcasting from our gallery space on 25th and Mission. And we're working with other people, Rebar, another sort of open source collective of people who are investigating privately owned public open spaces in downtown San Francisco. And
that, don't just skip over that one. I like that project. I've heard a little bit about this. What exactly is their aim? They're going into places around town. This is, obviously, you're the one should be answering this question, but I'm
no,
going to paraphrase.
Go ahead. The part of Amy will be played by Zephyr on this radio show. I love it.
Now you ask the question. Go ahead. So what exactly does Rebar do?
Well,
for this project?
For this project, they are really focusing in the mid-80s, the city of San Francisco, in a way to sort of revive the downtown area, allowed these major corporations to come in and build these huge corporate skyscrapers downtown, but sort of in exchange, or in a way to make it plausible to everyone else in the city, they had to designate certain parts of their building as public open space, which means the three of us could go down and hang out in these spaces. And there are 14 of them in downtown San Francisco. But when you walk into these spaces, it's blatantly obvious that we're certainly not welcome, and it's not a place where any of us would really go and assemble or spend time. And so they,
by us, you mean the public.
Yeah, the regular folk, the lumpen masses, the proletariat,
You're good at this.
Stop it. They've planned 14 different, they call them performances, which are organized sort of in flash mob style of going into these spaces and sort of doing something that's wouldn't necessarily be appropriate in those spaces. Like, we flew kites in these open spaces in downtown one day, much to the chagrin of many security guards.
Kite terrorists?
We were kite terrorists. It was pretty amazing. And actually a ton of fun. And they have they're playing cell phone games. They're really focused a lot on play and a lot of like real spontaneous activity. And they just had a performance this week, and like I said, more coming on all throughout this year and next. So it's pretty impressive. And we have a lot of documentation about those performances in our space at 25th and Mission.
Okay.
So
right in the corner where the old ghost building with the flower shop.
It certainly still is haunted, which we like. I think our ghost is a real fan of conceptual art. So
really,
yeah, she's been pretty supportive of us up until this point. So
I don't think she's going to sit well with radio though.
We'll have to see. Depends on what you guys play.
Yeah. So Chuck, what about yourself with programming stuff? I stopped by and checked out. One of my favorites was and I'm totally going to butcher this guy's name, but I'm looking. It was Din Kule.
Kule, yeah.
Kule?
Uh-huh.
I did all right?
Yeah, you did good. You did good.
Hey, thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Had you never seen his work before?
No, I have seen his work before, but I've never known how. It's one of those names where you look at it and you're like, oh, it's that name.
Yeah.
I don't know how to say it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I saw his work, and I was hoping you could tell me a little bit about it, because it's just about as neat as hell.
It is neat as hell, and he's a really sweet guy. Ding, his family immigrated to the United States, Southern California, in the 70s, and he went to school at Santa Barbara, graduate school at SVA in New York, and he now lives in Saigon. He went back there, and he's living there, and he's a cultural producer in Saigon. but he does these really wonderful, there's a really wonderful piece I'm so excited we're exhibiting. It's called From Vietnam to Hollywood, and it's 30-something photographs. It's 35 feet long, huge installation. And he uses imagery, found imagery from, flea markets in Vietnam, and then photojournalism images, and then images from films, Hollywood films about the Vietnam-American War. And some of those are woven based on grass mat weaving that he learned from his aunt who lived in southern Vietnam. And then there's another really lovely piece called The Texture of Memory, which is based on the photographs from Cambodia during the Khmer Rouge. And what he's done is he's stitched them, the photographs, on a white cloth, and viewers are invited to touch the threads.
Yeah.
And the more that it's exhibited, the oils from the hands will bring the faces out. Really tactile, beautiful, poetic kind of piece, given that so much of what he's dealing with are really horrible and horrifying subject matter.
I think that embroidery piece was definitely my favorite at that show.
Yeah.
And it's because it's so rare. I mean, even in this day and age of like large sculpture and interactive pieces, what have you, to go into a gallery setting, what have you, and be invited to touch something that looks super precious on the wall,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But in large print, there it was. It's like,
please touch.
Invited to please touch.
It's an interactive piece made by a cultural producer in Saigon.
All right. That's enough.
But Ding is really, he's wonderful, and he's going to be in December, he's going to be in Australia. He did this great piece on this Vietnamese man who built a helicopter, a farmer. He built a helicopter. And
out of what?
Out of found helicopter parts.
Get the hell out.
No. And I'll leave it now. And so he did this great video piece I saw at my friend Moira's house, and it's going to be exhibited there. He did it especially for this, I think it's some biennial or something. But anyway, the story is the Vietnamese government won't let this guy fly it. And they're just sort of, they don't know.
Has he flown it, though?
Well, I think he has. And so the government, it's gone all the way to the prime minister, and they don't really know how to deal with them because they don't have any laws about this. And, you know, there's no Federal Aviation Administration. So the compromise, it's sort of a stalemate compromise, was that he could fly it 1 meter off the ground, but that was it. And so it's this weird kind of story. And so Ding's become involved with this guy, and he's taking the farmer, and they're going to Australia, and they're showing this video piece. And Ding's a wonderful man. If you ever get a chance to meet him, you should meet him. Sweet guy, really smart.
Another just brief comment, or you know, long, what have you, was the grass mat weaving is so powerful with the movies of, especially, I don't know if this really came across with the radio, but he's taken Hollywood stills of like Apocalypse Now and other films and mixed them with media images of the very gnarliest kind that there are of the Vietnam War, and like enmeshed them together. Weave them. But
yeah, they're woven.
Did weave them.
Yeah. And so they look kind of pixelated, and it's interesting when you, because there's a Wally Rod video that's kind of next to that installation, and we were having trouble during installation with the DVD player. It was kind of breaking up and pixelating, and I look over and I see the Ding Lay woven pieces, and it's like, oh, it's almost like one image is trying to come through the other. It's like there's some bad broadcast or something that's been captured.
Psychic connection.
Yeah, but they're also very tactile, and you know, but you can't touch those.
No.
You can only touch the other one.
I mean, well, yeah. you can't touch them.
You could, but then...
We'll have to
kick you out.
I wouldn't touch them.
You probably touch them. You probably lick them.
What's your guys' policy on touching artwork? I mean, Southern Exposure, when you guys were over at Arto, did you ever bust people for touching stuff?
Yeah, we had a very strict no-touching policy. It took up most of my work day.
You can only touch the employees.
Yeah. Come over here.
Come to my office and touch me, but don't touch the art.
Strangely, I don't often think about the touching policy. It doesn't often come up in my work day. I can't believe it, but... We have some maps in the gallery that, no, you cannot touch those, but that's it. You can touch the TVs. You can, you're always welcome to touch me, Zephyr. You know that. I think we've covered that already often enough.
One of the things that I've always been curious about, and this, you know, this is a bit out of left field, but what the hell, is why isn't more artwork stolen right off the wall?
Someone can make a career of it. I've thought of it, seriously.
Oh.
I mean, it would be so easy to do.
You've thought of stealing art?
No, I
mean, this is what Chuck...
This is how I spend my day. I sit in my new office and I think about how I can steal one of the Ding Lays and not get caught.
I can make some money.
But you know, I just read a thing online that there's this group of bandits that are ripping off high-end restaurants, and I thought, finally, you know, I mean, why go to McDonald's, you know?
Yeah.
You should go where the money is.
Yeah.
You know, not that I advocate. No.
I mean, like,
robbing people.
Let's say we were a small crew, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It could be a conceptual art project,
sure.
And then we wouldn't get in trouble.
We're cultural producers. Yeah. We can do whatever we want.
We can get Southern Exposure to sponsor it, and we'll just go around
it's
and steal artwork.
Project.
Yeah.
Sounds
we'll
great.
Disrupt the. We'll disrupt the everyday. For people.
Oh.
Like, and we can have getaway cars and.
Okay.
I think this sounds like the beginning of a good collaboration between us.
It'll be like the Gorilla Girls. We can go in costume so no one will know who it is. But it'll be really fun and people will laugh a lot.
Like in Point Break where they all wore dead president masks.
Yeah. Nice.
So if you were to knock over a restaurant in town, which one would you go for?
I'm partial Boulevard.
Boulevard.
I'd go Boulevard.
Why is that?
I don't know. Really, really good line cooks that work there. Good looking. Good looking, fun to be around.
What's the one on Market? Zuni?
Zuni would be a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a tough entry and exit, though. I mean, I've cased the joint already,
right.
Boulevard, you've got, like, you know, a front door and a back door, so you could just, like, race on through.
Right. You got quick freeway access, too. That's the big one.
Oh, yeah.
You don't want to get caught in traffic 3 blocks away.
Yeah, good call. Right. Good call. Yeah. Okay, so now we have something to do after the show.
Right.
Where are we having lunch? Let's go to Plump Jack.
Oh, yeah. Let's rip them off.
So now, I think it's only fair to the listeners to kind of give some background on both of you guys as well. Amy, you used to work at Camera Work, no?
That's true.
Tell us a little bit about it.
Actually, I owe a lot of my esteemed art career to Chuck
Such
Mobley.
As it is.
It's all your fault, Chuck. I had... same as when I graduated from undergrad, right after graduate school, I had no employable...
Where'd you go there?
To graduate school?
Yeah.
Oh, I went to CCAC. I went to California College of Arts and Crafts.
You went to CACAC?
I did go to CACAC. And I am very proud that I am a C. I am a writer. So I went there and... I had no employable job skills whatsoever, so Susan Miller, who ran Millington Arts at the time, took pity on me and let me be the gallery assistant there.
How much were you making an hour?
About $7 a day. And,
and a bowl of rice.
And a bowl of rice.
Half bowl.
Yeah, and water if I was good. And Chuck was working at Camera Work, and they were sharing space at the time, and he was selling out to the commercial galleries at the time, and said I should apply for his job. I didn't think I could get it, and he was like, no, just turn in your application. I wasn't that bright at the time, so basically he was like, we'll hire you if you turn in your application. So I did, and then worked at... Camera Work, and then we did work together very briefly.
We worked for, 4 months or 5 months or something?
And then I sold out and went to academia, and thankfully was able to get out very quickly and come to Southern Exposure. So that's my story.
What about you, Chuck? You said you went into the commercial world?
Yeah, I did. I was at Camera Work for a while, and then I went to work for Cheryl Haynes at Haynes Gallery. And...
the big boss.
Did that for a while. Yeah, the big kahuna. Cheryl's great. I love Cheryl.
She is pretty great.
And I love the gallery, and I love everybody there. And it was fun. It was an interesting experience. And then the position at Camera Work opened up, and at the last minute I decided to apply for it and went through a round of interviews with a number of people, and finally they hired me. And so, yeah, now I'm doing this, so it's good. And working with Amy was... fantastic.
I'll stop.
She was really... It was really awful. I hate Courtney Fink. I hate Courtney Fink.
I love you, Courtney.
So one of the questions that I have, I mean, both of you guys, in the art sense of it, are the punk rockers of it. You work in the nonprofit world, and that's a different scrappy world.
It's reflected in our paychecks.
Right.
And our sad clothing.
Actually, I have to give a plug to Big Fat Nap, because they did my shirt, and they're having an opening tonight.
It looks great on the radio, Chuck.
Yeah, it's... It's light pink and it has a heart.
You don't have to hold it on, Chuck.
I'm holding it towards the microphone so you can see it. And it has a heart with wings. It says love. It was made by Zora, and she's wonderful. And Carla Milosevic is wonderful. She started the company.
Where are they having a show?
They're doing their opening tonight. I'm glad you asked. At a place called Soap Gallery on 8th and Howard, I think. It's around 5 o'clock. So they made this shirt for me so I could be on the radio with it.
Aww.
Yeah.
That's so, so nice.
What were we talking about originally?
Oh, we were talking about my t-shirt.
Yeah, what's your t-shirt? Who are you plugging today?
I'm plugging Southern Exposure. I'm wearing our newest shirt this year, which is...
Wait, do you have another one under it so you get two plugs in?
I'm cold.
You have three shirts.
I often layer, so I'm wearing three shirts right now, but you can only get the... Oh. We're getting our photos taken right now. We just stopped talking altogether.
Cameras come out.
All right, so the question that I was going to ask, aside from t-shirts...
We're not done advertising ourselves
God, you totally just got me with advertising. That word alone will get me every time.
Uh-oh.
Have you ever been tempted? I mean, obviously, Chuck, you went and tasted the forbidden fruit of the commercial world. Uh-huh. But, Amy, have you ever been tempted to go to the beast, the money machine, as it were?
Well, are you making me an offer?
Pirate Cat's hiring.
Yeah, I mean, I think every holiday when I go home and I hear it from my parents about how little money I make, I sometimes think of it. But I think ultimately... I don't know. I mean, I have friends that work in, you know, big institutions and things like that, and I really think what they're doing is important as well. But something that's really important to me and really what made me move to San Francisco was this idea. I mean, I really grew up in a place that didn't have the sense of community and didn't really have a place for people who thought like me to really sort of interact with the community and these kinds of nonprofit spaces are really, I think, what makes San Francisco the city that it is. And not to be too corny or Pollyanna about it, but I really, really believe in these community-run spaces. And I think, you know, I think the interactions that I've had and the people that I've met and what these organizations really do for emerging artists is just... And it's so important, and our arts education program, both Camerwork and Southern Exposure have pretty amazing arts education programs, and I don't know, I just think, like, it's a good fight to fight, and I've worked in other jobs where you're not really fighting for something, and I really like going to work and really fighting for something.
It's cool to make things happen for people. It's a lot of fun, you know. I mean, art making for a lot of people is a pretty solitary endeavor, and then to be able to bring them into the gallery and you know, write about their work and publish it and seeing that happen for them is just so much fun. It really makes it worthwhile.
Yeah.
I mean, now we sound like Kevin Chin. We're all earnest and, you know. But it's true. I mean, no, there are times I go home and I hurl crockery around and I just hate it and I want to kill people. But then I think about it and it's like, well, no, it's definitely worthwhile, you know. I mean.
I mean, that's the beauty, I think, of nonprofit art world is that you can go and bring art that actually matters in, art that doesn't just sell.
Yeah.
And right. For that reason alone.
Yeah, thank God.
I fucking love it.
Yeah. Well, and you can also collaborate with artists, and that's fun too, to commission new work and, you know, to sort of collaborate with them and try to make something happen that perhaps isn't commercial. I mean, you know, we've certainly shown artists that have commercial gallery representation and, you know, and have a decent career of that. And, you know, we sort of try to stay away from people that are maybe represented locally because they, you know, they have an outlet for their stuff. But, you know, you can bring them in and you can do something that maybe is completely unsaleable, you know, but it's an idea that an artist wants to realize. And so it's kind of fun to make that happen.
Cool. As far as picture takers, what have you around town, photographers, one of my favorite crews that is currently tearing up the scene happens to be Hamburger Eyes.
Yeah, I love Hamburger Eyes.
What do you, they just had a show at Stephen Wolf.
Yeah, I think they're fantastic. I was just hanging out with Dave POTUS right before I came over here. In fact, he did portfolio reviews for us, and his brother Ray is fantastic. I love those guys. I think they're fantastic, and I think that the magazine is fantastic, and the they work their asses off, and the production quality is amazing, and it's great to see it happen, you know, here, and I totally support it, and I want to work with them at some point, and yeah, I can't say enough about them. I think they're wonderful.
Yeah. Amy, but do you hate them?
No. Yes. I think they're awful. No. No, I think they're amazing, too. I mean, they were, I think it's they're in Bay Area now, and they really took that show seriously, and they really, I think, took advantage of that space, and they took advantage of being a part of that show, but they also at the same time are really, really believe in the kind of journal that they're producing and the kind of photography that they're pushing. And I think that's pretty amazing that you're able to sort of, you know, have your work exist in these different kinds of worlds. And so I've talked to them too, and I've met them before, and they're all about, you know, they want everyone's project to succeed. So it's like, you know, they're always really, really supportive of anyone they talk to, sort of in a lot of different capacities. So, yeah.
They're so open to looking at work. And I was hanging out with Ray one day, and, you know, their next issue is a music issue. And so after we'd hung out, I thought, oh, God, wait, I know, like, you know, five people or something that he should be looking at. And so it's cool. Immediately we started having this conversation, and, you know, and bringing these other people in and sending them to Ray. And I think, you know, a couple of them are going to be included in that issue. And so, yeah, they're fantastic. I love those guys. And I love that they're maintaining this kind of street photography that is really kind of in some ways dying out, you know, and they're kind of reviving it. And, you know, the fact that, I mean, photography changed my life, you know, as a young person, and photographing.
Tell me about it.
Well, photographing the world, you know, was a way to help me understand it. And I mean, I think that's really clear with what Hamburger Eyes is doing. And because a lot of those people are younger. And so it comes through. And I think, you know, it shows that photography is still relevant. And it's, you know, and the program, one of the programs we do, First Exposures, it's a mentoring program for kids that are, you know, underprivileged, you know, that, you know, have had difficult lives. And so they go and they learn the process of photography, and they're all given cameras, and they experiment with a bunch of different processes, and artists come in and work with them. And, you know, it's really sort of changed their lives too. And to see that come to fruition, and, you know, Eric Auerbach is in charge of that program, and he really spearheaded doing this book for them for the 10 years that the program's been a part of Camel Work. And it's fantastic, you know? And I just think, God, that's so great for these kids, you know, to see their work and published, and, you know, to be paid attention to, and someone is interested in what they're doing. And, you know, because there are people that are I think really good at writing, or maybe they're really great speakers, they're extraordinarily articulate, and then there are other people that see the world visually and deal with it that way. And that's a good outlet. It's an easy outlet, you know, certainly, you know, more so than dragging around paints and canvases to document your life, you know.
And, you know, I have to say, as far as, like, winning things, when people are a kid, what have you, I won a drawing contest in first grade. It was a Christmas drawing contest, and you were supposed to draw Santa and the sleigh and the presents. That was, like, you know, the rules.
Uh-huh.
And I won that shit, and that is still the biggest thing in my life.
Is it?
I consider it the best accomplishment.
That's fantastic.
So, like, to give that sort of thing.
A little sad.
Yeah. I won a 4-H award in fifth grade for designing a car that would get good gas mileage. Isn't that bizarre? And I got
really?
A patch. Yeah, but I remember being so excited about that.
That's what I mean. Like, the projects that both of you, your organizations, what have you, are doing, is so badass, because you give kids that moment of being like, hey, you know, look, my shit's in a journal or something, you know, or in a magazine, something like that. And you can't buy that kind of feeling, you know?
Well, I think something else that our both Southern Exposure and Camera Works arts education programs do that I think other maybe youth-based programs aren't doing is we both approach the students, we approach these kids with very sophisticated sort of ideas about art. Nothing gets dumbed down. It's not like kids' art or anything like that. I mean, the teachers that we have in our program and also the mentors that work in First Exposures are really sort of unabashedly talking about, you know, the most sophisticated art terms, and there's no filter for the kids, and there's no like you're young and I'm old and I know and you don't. It's really asking these kids to take a lot of responsibility for the kind of content that they're going to be producing. And I think because of that, we see students coming like over and over and over again. We actually have some overlap in our programs.
Ooh,
with
two-timers.
Yeah, with mentors who mentor in First Exposures and teach in our arts education program, and also with students. And it's pretty amazing. Like one of the students in our arts education program graduated from high school and is going to the Art Institute, and he comes and shows us his portfolio, and it's actually pretty amazing to see that, you know, he felt, you know, confident enough and inspired enough, and he's sort of following in his art dreams footsteps.
That's
so
great.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
You're listening to 87.9 FM. This is Pirate Cat Radio. My name's Zephyr. The name of the show is Frank Prattle. I'm on with two lovely guests today, spicy as well, Chuck Mobley of SF Camera Work and Amy LeDuc of Southern Exposure. If you feel like calling in and razzing these two about whatever the hell you want to razz them about,
I've got no phone calls.
It's 415-626-6180. And that's once again 415-626-6180. You can pledge if you want to pledge, but we don't really have any way to accept your money, so yeah. Probably not.
Or if you need a date or.
But, you know, moral support or haggling, you know, it's your really choice, whatever you want to talk about.
No one listens to you, Zephyr.
Yeah,
no one listens to
it's over.
Radio.
Blah, blah, blah. another thing that I wanted to kind of bring up, similarities between the two of you.
Personally or with the organizations we work for?
Personally.
Oh, okay.
We're going to leave behind the organizations, the companies, for a sec.
The lights are going low, right?
The fact that we're both women?
Yes. blonde women. you both happen to be writers, and you write.
I think that's more a thing for Amy than for me.
I think that you are a writer, Chuck. I'm sorry, I've seen it happen.
I just chain smoke and pull my hair out and bite my fingernails.
Oh, that's writing.
Me too.
Yeah. So, yeah, okay. Yeah, I guess that's the case, yeah.
Tell me, so one of the things, obviously, is you guys, I assume, go to some art shows, no?
Smart shows?
Art shows.
Oh.
Yeah. Occasionally. Yeah.
Some art shows.
I don't know what a smart show is.
I know. I was like, damn, who is that? Find out who the smart people are. Must get them next to Camera Work before Amy.
What are some good shows that you've seen recently that perhaps you felt like writing up?
Oh. I work for a nonprofit, man. I don't have time to go see art shows.
I know, it's like a busman's
show.
Holiday to go to art shows. I'll tell you my favorite thing right now, and I'm playing it really safe. I'm staying completely away from photography. And not only, I'm not just playing it safe, honestly, the best art thing in San Francisco is Poets Theater, Kevin Killian's Poets Theater.
Ooh.
If you haven't seen it, you are missing the best thing that's happening in San Francisco right now. The last one that he did, he just wrote with Larry Rinder.
Right? I was at that one.
You were at Did you love it?
Yeah.
It's fantastic. And Cliff Hanks is in it. He's my favorite person in the whole world. And the one before that, he wrote with Carla Milosevic. And he's fantastic. Just absolutely fantastic. I think someone needs to write about it. Maybe Amy will do that.
Huh? Who? What?
Ooh, what time is it?
Somewhere. I mean, they need to happen on a more regular basis somewhere, because I think they're just brilliant. And I love Kevin Killian. I just think he's a genius.
And you know, for the listening audience, what have you, these are... Kevin Killian is a writer, a playwright, I would say.
Poet,
playwright.
Novelist,
writer.
Editor, writer.
Who lives in San Francisco, and he invites people to collaborate with him. And this last one he did with Larry Rinder, and they made a play about... it's kind of a surreal play, a little bit, about a musician... who was getting evicted, was kind of a slacker musician.
Mission artist who was dating a developer, real estate agent guy, and then they had the bio chemical lab that's going in, so a couple of those people figured in, and then there was a Russian woman played by Carla, and
Leslie Show's played a Peruvian immigrant, I think.
Yeah. So they're all over the place. And the one before that, I think Kota Zawa played Ashton Kutcher, or somebody, some really kind of dumb person. And And Cliff Hanks played Betty Ford, which to this day, I mean, this is a year ago. I still tell people about it. He was just, and I kind of accosted him when he came to the opening of Camel Work, and I, you know, it's like, you just make my day. I think about him as Betty Ford. His stanza just look like he's exhausted by everyone's stupidity. He's just absolutely just over it, you know? And it just, I don't know. It's, they're so smart. They're well written. They're performed brilliantly, and it's, you know, and all the actors go out on stage, some in somewhat in costume, but then carrying their scripts, and but they do a pretty good job of reading them. They don't really, you know, screw up too much.
Yeah, not too much. No, it's good. Yeah.
So yeah, that's my favorite art thing.
Amy,
what?
You've had a little bit to think about it.
Oh, I really have a hard time with this question. I honestly do. I think,
is it because you don't like art?
Oh shit.
Outed on the radio.
Pirate radio. NPR is your favorite art thing.
Oh, Southern Exposure? No. Can I use that for every answer? Honestly, I think one of the things that happens to you, I've been writing sort of the art review, the 5-paragraph art review for about 5 years now for various publications, and I think something that happens is that I automatically go in and I'm deconstructing everything. It's really hard for me just to go in and just like let the work wash over me and just let me sort of enjoy it. I'm sort of constantly like everything from like, how is this framed? The lighting, why is the lighting like this? To, you know, how did they get this artist in here? And why did they put these students? So it's really hard for me just to sort of go in and say, this is a show I like and this is a show I don't like. So I can't really say, like, there hasn't been a show very recently that sort of, like, you know, I was, you know, just sort of enjoyed on a, you know, plain visceral level. I don't know what to say. I know I'm being awful.
Are there any phone calls? Is anyone calling in to chastise her for that?
I know. I know that's awful. It's a horrible thing to say, but I don't know.
Did you at least see Matthew Blarney?
I'm not familiar with his work. I haven't heard of him.
You know, I went to the press preview for that. I have some comments on Matthew Blarney.
Okay.
Give it to me.
I went to the press preview for that, and it was such a bizarre experience.
I went to that too.
Were you at the press preview?
We were there together.
No.
No, Barney? I saw you there.
Really?
Yeah.
We didn't go together because I remember going by myself.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But, you know, it's a lobby full...
Misconnection.
It's a lobby full of, you know, frumpy middle-aged writers, and they're standing there saying, the New York Times declared Matthew Barney the most important artist of his generation. I just thought, oh, man, now you've just completely ruined the show for me. Yeah. You know, because statements like that and the presentation like that runs completely antithetical to who I am and what I do on a daily basis. And I thought, I'm just going to start pronouncing everyone at Camel Work the most important artist of their generation. You know, it's just like, is it 1950? I mean, it really kind of seems like it. Everyone keeps saying that. And so that was my opinion. But I have to say, in Barney's defense, and I've never met him, I don't know him.
I got to see him pee once.
You got to see him pee.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Is it? So, are you going to... Size Queen, are you going to tell us?
Well, you know, I'm going to let you keep talking, but we'll get back to that.
Okay. But I heard from, you know, I heard from all the people that, all the, you know, people that really count, or the preparators and stuff, as a moment, they all had lovely things to say about him. They said he was a really nice guy.
Huh. So, there you go.
That's my Barney story.
I believe it's pronounced Blarney.
Blarney?
Yeah.
Matthew Blarney.
It's weird even saying
that. I don't know. You know, I mean, whatever. So the guy, you know, how can you begrudge somebody some success? I mean, you know, he's not building bombs, for Christ's sake. I mean, who cares? Whatever.
I'm not.
Yeah. Okay.
It's okay. Amy, are you gonna chime in? No.
I don't know. I mean, it's really hard for me. I think I'm kind of with Chuck. I mean, I've seen all of his movies and, you know, I've...
Do you have the t-shirt?
No, I don't. But I do have some petroleum jelly at my house.
I did too. Did you get that from Paul Zografakis?
Oh, no.
Paul Zografakis. Do you know Paul?
The performance artist?
He worked at New Langton for a while. That's where I met him. But he was deinstalling, and he made these little glass little things that he put the... are we getting a phone call?
Hello?
Is it Paul Zografakis?
Oh, my God. We're actually getting a phone call. I feel so nervous.
It's just his girlfriend. Oh. It's Baron. She's like, where the hell are you? We had reservations for lunch at 1:30.
How dare you, sir?
Was it Baron? Is she wondering where you are?
That was John Brummett, a member of Neighborhood Public Radio.
Yay, I just ran into him.
Calling in to sabotage Pirate Cat.
Now, that's my second favorite art thing in San Francisco, is John's Big Wheel Races down Lombard Street.
Ooh. Oh,
they
good call.
Are absolutely fantastic.
Good
call. He's so... I love John Brummett.
Yeah.
He's a bro. He grew up in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
That's the truth.
And I grew up in Georgia, so we're like kind of like brothers.
Is that how it works?
We even kind of look
alike.
Is
that how the South is?
Yeah. Yeah. <it's> right. Right. No.
Oh, damn it.
No, I love John. He's wonderful. And that Big Wheel Race is super fun. You know, he colludes with the cable car drivers.
Uh-huh.
And they block off the street for him, so that everyone can go down and there aren't any cars. You know, it was completely illegal. And
right,
all
right.
These tourists are like, what the hell is going
yeah.
on?
Yeah.
And I didn't make it this year because I'm not on John's email list, which I just chastised him for on the street. But the year before, I came in last, so that was cool.
Yeah.
And I got an iron-on patch.
The lastest.
Yeah, it was awesome. So, John Brummett.
Oh, am I supposed to say something about John Brummett right now?
Yeah, no, you can't. He does happen to be one of your artists, Amy.
Who's the guy, Mark Horowitz, that used to do a lot of stuff with John?
Right,
he's in commercials
right.
now for Nissan. Did you know this?
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
That's Mark Horowitz?
That's Mark Horowitz.
Oh, my God. That's weird.
It's really weird.
He's like living in his car for 7 days for Nissan or something?
I don't know. Well, hey, you know.
All right. Whatever pays the bills.
So that's that's a fork in the road that I'm sure you two will get to one day.
I would say yes in a heartbeat to a Nissan commercial.
I would too. My God.
I'm sorry, man. I've suffered enough. Bring it on. I'll Toyota, whatever. I have no problem.
I just want to talk real quick about one thing. And this strikes a little close to home for both of you.
Mm.
And this is one of my personal favorite questions of all time. Mm. If you happened upon $25 million check laying on the street that just happened to be made out to Chuck Mobley or Amy LeDuc, and it was spelled correctly even.
Wow, that doesn't happen often.
And you took it to the bank and you were like, what the fuck, I'm just going to cash it just to see.
Uh-huh.
You know? And you did, and it went through. What would you do with that money?
Oh, my God.
Well, is the check I find, is it made out to Chuck or to Amy?
It's made out to you.
Oh, okay.
If it's made out to Amy,
you're
then
like,
I start plotting.
I know.
Then I'm like, damn it. Well, at least I was always nice to her. Maybe she'll buy me a Volvo. God, I don't know. I don't play the lottery. The last time I played the lottery...
You're not playing the lottery. You're just getting free money.
But see, I never entertain fantasies like this, so I never have a good answer for them, because I'm just sort of convinced that I think it's the pessimist, cynical, misanthropic part of me that...
Oh, barf.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Okay, I got to dodge one question, though, so you can dodge one of them.
I would have people killed. I think that would be the first thing I would do. I would have people killed, and I would go out for
that.
A really good meal. And what else would I do?
You travel all over
I'd
the world.
I'd cure cancer and AIDS.
Oh.
Which one first, cancer or AIDS?
I'd both at the same time.
Oh.
One
no pill.
Stopping me. That's what I would do.
Okay.
Too many people have suffered.
Yeah.
And then I would maybe give a little bit of money to camera work if they were real nice.
And they put my name up really shiny in
the
gallery.
A donor wall just for me.
It's just a big mirror.
A monument to me. We'll have Richard Serra put in a Chuck Mobley lead.
We'll have Jeff Koons make a big statue of you.
What would you do, Amy?
God, I think I'd pay off all my friends' student loans, and not
yay!
Because...
That's a good one. Yay.
Not because, I'm your friend!
Not because I'm generous, but because I'm sick of hearing all my friends complain about their
Sally
student
May.
Loans. I'm like, shut up!
We have a good student loan story. Actually, yeah, but we won't talk about that.
All right, no.
I wasn't going to say that.
We're gonna level it out for the radio listening audience. Mm-hmm. I'll tell how much I owe, and you guys tell how much you owe.
How much do you owe?
I owe right now... I've got it down from 17,000 to 2,000.
To 2,000?
That's over 10 years, though.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Chuck?
I just paid mine off this year.
How much were you in for?
I was down to like 1,800. 1,500, 1,800.
What were you up to at the top?
Oh, it wasn't that much. Because I went to school a long time ago, so mine was not more than 10.
Okay.
But yeah, so I had to pay mine off because they were coming after me. And so Amy kind of helped me out with that, which was good.
I wasn't talking about you. I swear to God. Yeah,
Amy was a real savior. Because I call her and I'm like, oh, I got this letter and it looks really bad. And he's like, I'll help you. And so she drives
He's like calling from the bathroom in camera work.
Yeah, I'm calling from the bathroom. I'm in big trouble.
Amy,
I need your...
Amy, get me now.
Do you have $1,000 I can borrow today? And yeah, that was really... It was horrible at the time, but I can laugh about it now.
Yeah.
You don't have any student loans because you got a rich mama.
It's more like rich daddy.
Rich daddy.
Well, that's good. See? There you go.
Yeah.
Here's to the LeDuc dynasty.
Yay.
You're not listening.
Your dad's like, man, I was listening to these hillbillies. They were rocking it out. It was Pirate Cat something. I don't know. Then my daughter came on.
My big lesbian daughter in San Francisco. What about Heidi? You have to hear stories about Heidi, Amy's mom, because she's awesome. I've never met her. She's this mythical figure to me, this like big camp diva.
Yeah.
I know I would worship if I...
I think if she lived here, men would dress as her for Halloween.
Really?
I'm convinced of it.
Wow.
She is an unbelievable presence in my life. So people who know me, her presence sort of emanates from me. And I write about her a lot. And as I get older, I act like her a lot.
Yay. We love Heidi.
So,
do you guys both... I mean, to stay true to the cliche, do you find yourselves following in your parents' footsteps? That, you know, you look in the mirror occasionally, you say things?
No, but you know, I find the older I get, the more I sort of... listen to my parents more, you know, like my father's telling me about Roth IRAs and mutual funds and stuff. And so I think, oh, damn it, now you've cursed me. I have to do it, you know. But following in their footsteps, no, but I can see where I'm like them very much.
Yeah, I think I'm the same. I mean, my dad's a CEO and a member of the Christian Coalition and, you know, that guy. And he, you know, he drives a Escalade. And golf.
Escalade.
It's like the big SUV.
And okay.
And my brother drives a Hummer. And yeah, so they live in the suburbs and they have a very happy, lovely, wonderful life. But yeah, so.
You don't have to spill your guts about your family, though. It's nice that you did.
And then when I was 9?
No, stop talking now. Turn it off.
Chuck, just hold me. I'll be okay.
I love my parents. I was a snotty teenager. I was so rotten. But the older I get, I mean, I was so lucky to have the parents I had. You know?
Me too.
Fantastic people.
Good job.
Yeah.
I think we're going to end on that, ladies and gentlemen.
Awesome. Okay, we're done.
Jesus Christ, that was 1 hour.
He didn't ask about our sex lives.
I know, God, happened. I was like, geez, it's coming. First the parents, and then the sex. It always happens that way.
My name is Zephyr. You've been listening to Frank Prattle on 87.9 FM. This is Pirate Cat Radio. You've been hearing live the madness, what have you, of Chuck Mobley from SF Camera Work and Amy LeDuc of Southern Exposure. You guys want to give your... websites for your institutions?
Sure. It's sfcamerawork.org.
Okay.
Ours is soex.org. And
was that sexo?
It is soex.org. And oh, I might need a job tomorrow.
Camerawork IRA.
Yay. Fire her, Courtney. She's bad.
Thank you so much.
Thank
and
you,
we'll
Thanks,
see you next
Zephyr.
Week.